Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 175 of the 365 Message Center Show. Today, we're talking about Teams and OneDrive destinations and Migration Manager. We have a couple updates on Yammer, including the public preview of guest support and magical text predictions in Outlook. Roll it.
The following episode was recorded live on YouTube. Check out our website at messagecenter.show for all of our episodes.
We will start with the first message. So Daniel, what is that first message?
Yeah, this is Teams and OneDrive destinations in Migration Manager. That is MC229093. And so let's take a step back. What is the Migration Manager? This is functionality that Microsoft introduced to allow you to install a controller, basically a service onto various of machines of your choosing to allow you to do migrations from on-prem to the cloud. So you would use this Migration Manager, which is found in the SharePoint Admin Center for SharePoint Online, and be able to basically turn those machines into bots, really, being able to control those machines, various machines, to do migrations. This is great for enterprises that have large migrations to do because you don't want to just use one computer and only its resources to be doing that. So we are told that we now have, and it's not coming, it's now have Teams and OneDrive destinations as well as SharePoint from what we had before. So I say we have now because there is no rollout time. They just did it. It is there now, and they do apologize for the lack of advance notice. So when you go through, you select a source, and that's a network share. And when you select, when you come to the destination step, you will now have OneDrive, SharePoint, and Teams. When you choose Teams, you'll be able to select the team and the channel that you're going to migrate those files into. So there's some questions that I've received from clients before of why choose a team rather than SharePoint, right? Because why would you, it's the same destination, right? Because it's the SharePoint side is the storage behind it, right, Daryl? I mean, why would you choose Teams over SharePoint? Do you have an opinion on that? Why would you choose Teams?
Well, can't say I've used this service, but yeah, but if you go in via SharePoint, then you can navigate your way to the document library. And then at that first level, you can see the folders for the channels. So what is the difference?
Hey, for me, it's just a convenience thing. I know which team it is. I click the team, I click the channel, and then I just go. If I'm doing SharePoint, I have to know the URL. I have to go into the proper place and make sure that I'm putting it in the proper place. When I go through Teams, I don't have to do that. I just have to pick the right team and the right channel, and voila, it works. This, when you go through and use the SharePoint Migration Manager, which is the migration tool that Microsoft provides, you have the same options where you can migrate to Teams as well if you want to. Same thing. It really is just, for me, a convenience thing to make sure that you're selecting the correct destination. So this is, like I said, already rolled out. You can find the information and learn more about how to use the Migration Manager there in the link at the bottom of the message. You do have to have the prerequisites installed. And what is that? That is that service I mentioned earlier to allow Migration Manager service in the cloud to manage those machines as migration workers. So,
do you have to provide those workers yourself from an Azure subscription or something like that?
No, you're using on-prem. So, I mean, these machines on-prem, right? So you're installing these services wherever you're migrating the content from. And this is actually really great for if you have file servers all over the country or all over the world and you're wanting to migrate content, you really want that those migration machines to be close to the content. So if you're doing, if you're all over the world, for instance, and you're migrating content from, let's say you're doing it from New Zealand, great, then use machines in New Zealand to do the migration. And then, okay, now next is files in Germany. Well, use machines in Germany to do that rather than in New Zealand, right? Because then the files don't have to traverse your WAN to get to the machines that are doing the migration to the cloud. So there's some management there that can help you. So
nice one.
Anyway, so have fun with that. And it is available now. Congratulations. Aren't you glad you have it? You didn't even know.
No.
So speaking of Teams, let's talk about doing some calling and dialing in Teams, but with multiple numbers, Daryl.
That was, yeah, that was smooth, mate. So multiple number dialing available in Microsoft Teams chat, MC229071. If you're reading this, you think multiple number dialing, does that mean that we're in a conference call and we can bring in multiple numbers? I thought we could already do that. No. You have to read a lot closer. And it's actually something you probably don't appreciate unless your organization is using Microsoft Teams phone system. This is where you can call landlines and mobile numbers. Do you have that in place at your workplace, Daniel?
I do not, no.
Yeah. I mean, it's we shifted over to it partway through this year, and because we're shifting from the same equivalent from Skype for Business.
There you go.
Yeah, it's good. It is also a reminder that don't underestimate the difference between the two platforms, that while they might provide similar or the same functions, they definitely look different. And this has been one of my gripes to date of coming into Teams is the contact management. And so this update, this feature update definitely helps to solve part of that problem. We were really spoiled when it came to the integration between Skype and Outlook, and that you could go in and you can hover over contact cards and call certain numbers and all that gorgeous stuff. And then when it came to shifting to Teams, there was a piece within the calling app called Contacts, which still needs a lot of work. And today, that's how you would try and call multiple numbers. What are multiple numbers? Let's put another question to you, Daniel. Do you have a couple of numbers published in Active Directory for you?
Yes, I do. Yep. Office, mobile.
Yep. And so office, the office number is your direct dial?
Yep. Yes.
And, and mobile number. Okay. So this is what will become available within the chat app, where you're actually trying to engage with your contact. You know, rather than having to go off to the separate part of Teams and create and maintain a separate contact list, this is right there. If you search for someone in that search bar across the top of Teams and you find a new contact across your organization and you want to give them a call, then you can do so. And what we've had up to now too also is the handset button will place a Teams to Teams call. Great. Saving costs. It's relying on someone being signed into Teams. And yeah, okay, that's fine. So we see in this screenshot, ignore the top part here. I can explain that a bit later. But our two numbers that are published for this person, their mobile and their business number. And so you will have to click the drop-down arrow to see those options. If you just hit the handset, you're going to place a Teams to Teams call. So yeah, I've created a short video, which I'll drop a link into the description and the card or whatever for this video. But basically that means that it's easier for me to search for someone and ring an alternate destination that they might be able to get a hold of them. Strange thing though, like this business number, in some cases, that is also attached to Teams, like for me. My direct dial is being provided by the Teams phone system. I think that's the general idea. So if you're not signed into Teams, you're not going to get that call, and you're not going to hit the the handset button and get them either. So that just wipes out two destinations already. The mobile number's available.
And I think they're, you know, really wanting you to not be disconnected, right? So you always be logged into Teams on your mobile, on your phone, whatever. So, but your point is very valid. And this is not about really making it to where you can get in touch with someone at all times, right? I mean, we should be able to say, I'm not going to be available. Mm. And, you know, so I'm going to get out of Teams. But your point is very valid. Of these choices, if you're not in Teams, you know, what options are you going to have if that is your platform, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right. So expect to see that. When is this coming out? Rolling out mid-December. Phil says that he's already seen it in his production Tenet. No preview mode set, so it just appears. And look, let's be honest, it's not a feature where you go, oh, let's just try this in preview. You've already made the choice to publish someone's phone number because you've got it in Active Directory. It's already been there. So it's about making it convenient in a place that you can use it. But yeah, right. that's about it. And check out the video to see it in action, I guess. Now, this next one, Daniel, is going to be and has already created a bit of excitement for people who are presenting a lot in Microsoft Teams. Mm-hmm. Tell us about this one.
Yeah, this is Presenter View and Teams Presentation Sharing, MC229331. And this is all about being able to add a presentation, a PowerPoint, to your Teams meeting, and then being able to present that presentation in your meeting. And when you do, you get a similar experience to when you actually do a presentation in PowerPoint native, where you actually get a presenter's view, meaning you get to see notes, you get to see the next slides that are coming up, and be able to really manage the presentation. And instead of just having a slide and going, I don't know what's next, I forgot. So being able to manage that kind of experience. One thing I wanted to mention this right out of the get-go, timing, standard release and GCC tenants start rolling out mid-January and complete by the end of January. So everyone's going to get this, including standard government tenants, in January. And then GCC High and DoD tenants, those are their higher security tenants, will start rolling out in February and complete in mid-February. So that's where everyone's going to get this functionality, and it's coming out to you really quickly. It's fantastic. So do you, Daryl, do you use PowerPoint this way in your meetings? Or do you present on a screen and then share that screen or share that output of PowerPoint, if that makes sense, right? But there's a difference. You can select a window mm-hmm. of the PowerPoint, or you can share your screen, or do you upload a PowerPoint?
That's a good question. I think most of the time when I'm presenting content to do with slides, I also have to quickly change to something on my desktop. I might be demonstrating something, and whether it be a browser, an application, or something in Windows. So if I was to use this method, then I should probably have a demo recorded of what I wanted to demonstrate. And that will allow me to stay within that presenter view. But I tend to like to do those live demos and like Stephen said, just share their screens across. But the thing about this... is if you're wanting to allow people to skip ahead, if you do want to be able to see notes that cue you off, I do occasionally use Presenter View because I want to be able to see something at a glance just off to the side there. That's the thing I'm going to be covering soon, so I'm going to start transitioning that, talking about it and hinting towards it, so it helps to be a smooth cut through to what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and I think so you're talking about recording that demo, you would have to put that as part of your PowerPoint to then show it. So for me, any presentation that I'm giving that has demo, I tend to just share my screen, and because I don't want to in Teams, because I don't want to have to go through that process of if, and I want it to be a live demo so that people can ask questions and I can show them rather than, you know, it being recorded, then I would do it that way, because I'd rather not have to, oh, I got to stop sharing that window and share this other window. I can just bring up the browser or whatever I'm demonstrating and just do it.
Can you see my screen? Can you see my screen?
Yeah. Okay. No, you just share the screen and then for your PowerPoint. But and then what you're saying is true. You know, you want to kind of, I like to put in, and people use the notes area differently. It just depends on how you want to present. Some like to put what you would expect in kind of like a teleprompter in your notes. Others like to put a outline, just kind of here points to make sure you hit. And then I know people who don't use the notes at all. They just, they take cues off of the screen, or they just memorize their presentation all the way through. So this, I think, is great to be able to use the presenter view. I just don't know if that I'm going to use it that much, unless it is a presentation that I know I'm not going to do any demo for, or like you said, put demo in this presentation. The other gotcha on this is if anyone else takes control while you're doing your presentation, which, you know, it happens, people click things and whatever, and they take control, then your view goes away and now you're watching the presentation and now they have presenter view. Now this could be good if you're tag teaming a presentation, right? Because you just, it could flow really well. You're just going along and then the person you're tag teaming with says, take control. And now they're going along. Right. And to the other people, they don't know what's going, you know, they didn't know what happened. Right. They just, it's happening. But if someone goes rogue and takes control, then, you know, you've lost your presenter view. The other thing is there's really no way to turn this off as far as what we were being told here. Not that I think it should be turned off, but, you know, we always kind of address that as well. So, yeah. So rolling out in the next couple of months, it's fantastic, I think. So next message is a Yammer one, right, Daryl? We're going to talk about community and questions. I've got questions, Daryl, about Yammer.
It's more about the insights into the community. So we've had Q&A for a while now, and marking things as best answer. But MC229504 is about giving us a different way of viewing these insights. What you'll find when this rollout happens, or when this update happens, which is available to all customers during late December, that the new Yammer will present the figures in a different way. Some of the figures will be the same. Some of them, there'll be a new view there for questions and answers. So just a quick comment about the rejiggle of the community insights. They're still going to be on the About tab, and they'll be there for each community. And you can go in, and it's always interesting that the insights are available not just to the community admins, but they're also available to members. You'll go into that same entry page, you'll still see it. You'll see whether the numbers around people that have posted, read, or reacted to. And the figures are just going to be presented in some places as a horizontal bar rather than this pie graph. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That it's like it's a ring and it shows. I always think of those as quite useful graphs. The total of what's going on is this full circle. And I can see a portion of that is read, reacted. What's the other one? Posted. Yeah. So they're shifting away from that to bars. What do you think?
So there is a whole movement that has been happening for a while now that hates on pie graphs and circle charts. So, you know, maybe that's what it is. They're wanting to go to bar because everyone hates pie charts. I actually like pie charts. I know, don't save your rotten vegetables to throw at me some other day. when they're used properly. And I actually, in this case, I think they're used properly. So I don't like that they're going away from it. But
I agree. I like that at a glance I can see this is the picture of all the activity going on within a within a community. And that I can see that a portion of that is you know, the various types of activities. But now I have to interpret that across different bars. So anyway, that's one change, and in my opinion, it's a bit of a negative one. But there's a new line graph that will draw your attention to total active people in the community over time. And these are the things that I actually do appreciate. When you do see that reaction over time, that the line graph will indicate, you know, how active people are in various communities. And at a glance, oh, look, I better try and drive a bit more engagement and try and get some things going. This is where questions and answers comes in. I think that's been one of the best updates for Yammer communities in a long time. Everything else seems to be incremental bits here and there. But think about the engagement you drive with a question and answer, or place to go and ask questions and get answers, and then mark as best answer. Are you seeing this used effectively in some places that you work, Daniel?
For some of my clients, I am hearing that it's working well. I do not use Yammer internally, so we don't use this functionality. But I am hearing that for those that do and have fully adopted, that it is working well.
Yeah. So that's where, just to speed this bit up, but it's the key part of the message, that you will have a new view within these insights to see questions and answers. And this will show you the number of questions that have been asked, some that are still hanging there for answers, some that have been marked as best answer. And so that information is really valuable for someone trying to drive engagement within the community and making sure that questions have been answered. Think about using the Yammer community to drive engagement in an adoption program, and you're sending people to a SharePoint page or to the Yammer community itself. They're asking questions. You're encouraging your champions to get in there, and don't leave so many questions hanging. So that is rolling out late December. Moving along to our next message. This is I guess it's the headline.
This is the magic.
It's magical because it's a double barrel on this one, isn't it? You've combined.
You get a double message for today. This is the first. I'm going to actually. So both of them start with introducing text predictions in Outlook 4. And then one of them is Windows and one of them is iOS. Right. So let's start with iOS. That's MC229558, introducing text predictions in Outlook for iOS. And then the one for Outlook for Windows is MC229381, which there's interesting because they're right back to back in the message center, but the numbers are way off. I mean, it's almost a couple hundred digits off from these, which I find interesting. Maybe they had the message ready and didn't push it through because they held back. But anyway, so this is all about that text prediction. When you're typing, it's kind of that type ahead, some might call it, to predict what you're going to say in the sentence. And we've had this for Outlook on the web, but now it's coming to our devices. So this is coming to our iOS device for our iPhone and iPad. Although I say iPad, and I don't know that that's true because this is iOS. It's not the iPad
OS. Yeah.
So I'm not sure if it means both. So that'll be interesting. So iOS and we do have the ability to turn this off in the settings. So you can go and actually turn off text predictions if that's what floats your boat. And then, of course, on the Windows app, Windows, whatever we're calling it these days, Outlook for Windows app. So you're able to turn it off there. So for the both of these, they're rolling out soon. The for iOS, early January, and expected to be late February 2021 for this to roll out. No indication that we're getting any kind of phased rollout for, you know, those that have changed their channels for their tenants. And I said channels because I was looking at the Outlook for Windows one, because we do have that as part of, if you're on the current channel preview for your apps, your for Windows, I almost said Office, in early January, and then the current channel late January. So you may have rolled out an earlier version, have been rolled out in this month in December for this Windows one as well. So this is kind of cool. In fact, I think the first time I saw this was in a competitive company's email system. They were doing Google. Predictive. Oh, are we allowed to say that?
Yes. Sure, why not? It's our show.
Yeah, I know. In Gmail, being able to, you know, see a predictive and you hit tab and it takes the information. Now, I will say for Gmail, I found it very ineffective at first because it was one word at a time. And I'm like, this is not very cool at all. I mean, one word, I could type that before I could read what you're saying and say, is that the one I want? And then hitting tab, I could have already typed anyway. But for this, you know, and now for Google, they're doing phrases, and I like that. I really like this functionality, less typing. For someone who may have some issues with spelling, this is nice because maybe it puts the words there and you don't have to check spelling. So bring in this to your device, I love it. What do you think, Daryl? Have you used this kind of technology in Google platforms and as well as the Outlook for Web? Have you used this? Do you like it?
To be honest, I haven't. I took a closer look at it yesterday, recorded a little video. It'll be out at some point, but I have this feeling, the same feeling actually about the quick responses or suggested replies, that it's going to do something that's a bit meh to our language. It's going to put us all in the same tone and finishing certain things off. I too found that, yes, it's structured around certain phrases, and I had to hunt a bit to really try and find what those phrases were to try and get it to trigger off. Is it going to be useful to me? I actually find the second point for me is that to me, as I'm touch typing, I will get to the end of that phrase before that phrase almost has appeared. So it's more of a distraction to me as I'm typing. It's like, okay, great. I've got this other little grayed out thing there with a tab button there. I could hit tab, but I'm four letters away. Is that actually what I wanted to say? No, not quite. So I'm going to keep typing. Thanks very much for interrupting me. That's my feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes I see it when I've already typed the word, just like you're saying, I'm going along and I'm typing and I look up and I go, oh, it was suggesting something. Okay, fine. You know,
typing and then look up? Do you type like this?
No, I don't. I actually type, but sometimes I'm looking at something else while I'm typing over here. You know, you're looking and trying. I do a lot of describing content. You know, someone says, hey, how do you do this? Well, I can look at the screen of the thing they need to do. And then while I'm replying to the email, you know, over on the other side of the screen or a different screen, I can be looking at it saying, click here, you know, do it. Anyway, I like it. Anything that computers can do for me, you know, I'm going to take a second look at, and I kind of like it. But, you know, we, just like you mentioned, we have talked about this whole standardization of communication in that, you know, if the computer is always filling in for us what we should say, then we're all going to be saying the same thing. Yep. That you've brought that up before. I somewhat agree with that.
A good example, we see this,
you know,
is when a LinkedIn contact has got a new job or some change in their position.
Congrats.
So congrats.
Well, and what I like is systems where if you're going to do auto response, allow me to edit it before you send it. I hate when you give me the option and I click it and it sends it immediately. No, don't do that, because I wanted to say something else and now I'm having to type it yet or send yet another message. But I agree with you. So That's rolling out soon. The last message today is again about Yammer. So this is a wonderful preview, right?
Yeah, this is something, actually, as I was going through looking at this message, it made me realize that I hadn't got my prerequisites in order. This is announcing public preview of guest support in Yammer. Does that sound familiar? Guest support in Yammer. Yes, it does. We've been able to have conversations with people outside of an organization, but inside a Yammer group. They were called groups back then. But this is, we actually had to forego that functionality for a little while if you shifted over to a mode in Yammer called native mode. So I'll say the message number before I get too far into it, MC229724. Yammer's long journey into Microsoft 365. They eventually got to a point where they were unifying accounts and it was one and the same. This is what, if I can simply describe it, native mode is. That you have Yammer completely controlled groups, identities, all that sort of stuff is all just within Microsoft 365. But before that, you had sort of two synchronized kind of identities. We were able to have a group within our internal Yammer network, our home Yammer network, and it could be set up for a project for discussion or supporting customers or the like. And we could invite them in with their Yammer account and they would just get that isolated experience. Much like external teams or teams with external guests. But when organizations shifted over to native mode, they had to forego that. And this is about bringing that back and doing it in a controlled way. So when it does become available, which is second half of December, we'll start rolling out in public preview. And then expect to be complete by end of December. You'll be able to enable and disable guests. So actually, before I list those out, they're all the usual things that you expect to be able to do to control that guest experience. You can turn it off. You can control if people can invite guests into the tenant. You can create a list of allowed domains or block domains to manage that. And there's the rich audit logs, as it says there in the message, so you can go back and see what sort of activity is going on. But it's good to see it come back. I think that it was a useful thing to have for organizations that wanted to bubble things around that Yammer experience. And if you knew that there was an organization that also used Yammer, then you could bring that in. And therefore, with all its richness, you can embed that Yammer conversation and community within various places within SharePoint too. That's about it. The prerequisite that I had to look at, I discovered I wasn't really in native mode. I thought I had it covered.
That's an important prerequisite there, Daryl.
So. It is, yeah. And going through it, when you start kicking that process off, it's almost like a migration. It's going through and doing all these pre-checks and saying, you're going to need to remediate this. What do you want to do about that? So you have to take a closer look at kicking on over to native mode if you haven't done that already. But yeah, that'll be available in a little while. And that really wraps up the end of our messages for the week. I know there was other stuff there that could be interesting to cover. Dark mode for OneDrive for the web.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Nice. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, though. Thank you for those in chat. And remember to catch us on our website at messagecenter.show for all the links for audio and, of course, to the video podcast. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And I think we have a lot of information. Daryl was just talking about a lot of great posts that we couldn't even cover in the Message Center. So make sure you go and check that out.
All right. We'll see you again next week. Bye for now.
Bye.